Imagine someone showed you, like absolute undeniable proof, that your deepest political belief was just completely wrong. Would you change your mind?
I mean, we all like to think we would, right?
Yeah, exactly. We like to think we're reasonable. But the overwhelming consensus of psychological science basically says, well, you probably wouldn't.
Right. We love to imagine that we are perfectly rational calculators, you know, updating our worldviews with every new data point, sort of treating politics like a giant, very complicated spreadsheet.
But the human brain simply doesn't process reality that way, does it?
It really doesn't. We are fundamentally hardwired to choose a compelling story over a dry, objective fact almost every time.
So today we are pushing all those policy papers and the economic data to the side. We're taking a deep dive into the human layer of politics.
Yeah, the messy, unpredictable, fiercely emotional core that actually drives history.
Exactly. We have our hands on a stack of sources labeled Dossier Trump 2015 to 2029, and we are zeroing in on Chapter 19 today, which really, it rips the lid off the psychology of power and leadership.
It's a fascinating chapter.
It really is. We're looking at why millions of people follow certain leaders with this almost personal loyalty. But before we go any further, I know we need a crucial disclaimer here.
Yes, absolutely. We are not here to take political sides. The sources we are analyzing, they don't engage in partisan cheerleading or political takedowns, and neither will we.
Right. Our mission is strictly impartial. We are just mapping the psychological, sociological, and, well, the evolutionary mechanics outlined in these documents.
All to help you, the listener, understand the profound political shifts of that 2015 to 2029 era.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if I want to understand why a voter in 2016 or 2024 acts the way they do, the sources suggest we actually have to look at how humans behaved, like thousands of years ago on the savannah.
Which sounds wild, I know.
Yeah. Like, what does our evolutionary past have to do with a modern voting booth?
Well, pretty much everything. I mean, our brains haven't significantly updated their hardware since we were hunter-gatherers.
So we're basically running ancient software.
Exactly. For almost all of human history, your physical survival depended entirely on the group. Being cast out into the wilderness basically meant death.
Wow. Okay, so the stakes were literal survival.
Right. And because of that, we evolved to prioritize group cohesion, clear rules, and strong leaders far above the pursuit of objective truth. We are just programmed for certainty, protection, and a sense of belonging.
So when the modern world gets chaotic, say there's a sudden spike in inflation or a global pandemic or just rapid technological disruption, our ancient brains don't think, oh, let's read a complex 50-page economic white paper to understand the nuances.
No, not at all. They think, where's the leader who will protect our tribe from this threat?
That makes so much sense. The dossier highlights this exact dynamic, right?
It does. It explains that in times of general stability, citizens will totally tolerate complex, bureaucratic, slow-moving political systems.
Sure, because there's no immediate danger.
Exactly. But you introduce severe economic or social uncertainty, and the psychological demand for clear, simple direction just skyrockets.
It kind of makes me think of being in a crowded, really noisy building when the power suddenly cuts out.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, like it goes pitch black. Total silence for a second. You don't want a structural engineer to stand up and give a nuanced lecture on why the electrical grid failed.
Right. You definitely don't want that.
You want the loudest, most confident person in the room holding a flashlight saying, follow me. The exit is this way.
And in the political landscape mapped out between 2015 and 2029, those flashlights took the form of highly tuned, psychologically potent slogans.
Like America First or Take Back Control or Make America Great Again.
Exactly. And people often dismiss those political slogans as dumbed down or simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources actually highlight them as masterclasses in cognitive relief.
Cognitive relief, I like that.
Yeah. They take incredibly multifaceted global anxieties, you know, trade deficits, cultural shifts, international supply chains, and boil them all down into a single actionable narrative.
But it's not just the simplicity of the slogans that works, right? If the slogan is the vehicle, we have to look at the fuel powering it.
Right, the raw emotions.
Yeah. When we transition from that intellectual need for certainty, we hit the emotional bedrock of human behavior, which is fear.
The dossier identifies fear as the absolute strongest evolutionary driver. I mean, modern politics, beneath all the debate, usually boils down to three primal, almost subconscious questions.
Which are?
Am I safe? Does my family have a future? And will I lose what is important to me?
Wow. Yeah, think about the last time you saw a political headline that made your blood boil or your stomach drop.
Right, did you stop to rationally fact-check the source?
Probably not. You probably instantly hit share because your brain perceived a direct threat and just wanted to sound the alarm.
Exactly. When people answer no to those three questions, or even fear they might answer no in the near future, their neurological threat response systems activate.
And then what happens?
They become intensely receptive to any leader who validates that fear, points out the cause of it, and promises to act as a shield.
Wait, but hold on. If fear is the ultimate political weapon, why don't, apocalyptic doomsday candidates win every single election?
That is a really good point.
Right. Why do optimistic campaigns think Reagan's Morning in America or Obama's Hope succeed so massively? If we are just scared animals, hope shouldn't work.
Well, it's because fear is exhausting. You can use fear to wake people up and point out an adversary, sure, but the sources show that humans just cannot sustain a perpetual state of panic without burning out or tuning out.
Ah, okay. So that brings us to the twin engine of political mobilization, hope.
Right. You need something to run toward, not just something to run away from.
That makes total sense.
Successful political movements might heavily utilize fear to critique the present, but they must ultimately use hope to sell an attractive vision of the future.
Because voters rarely mobilize by the millions strictly to vote against something.
Exactly. They need a vision of restoration or progress or a societal return to anchor themselves to. Hope is basically the psychological permission structure that turns fearful individuals into an active movement.
So if a leader successfully taps into both of those engines, they validate your deepest anxieties and offer you a hopeful way out, politics stops being a detached debate about, marginal tax rates.
It morphs into something incredibly personal. The 2015 to 2029 dossier flags this as the defining shift of the era.
Politics became less about policy and more about identity.
Completely. It fused with nationality, culture, religion, geographic region, education level, and generation. Politics stopped being what you do and became who you are.
It's like when someone insults your family or your favorite sports team.
Oh, the sports team analogy is perfect.
Yeah. If an acquaintance comes up to you and says your brother is a terrible person and offers a list of behavioral statistics to prove it, you don't say, "Fascinating data points. I will objectively reconsider my familial ties."
No. Your heart rate spikes, your pupils dilate, and you go straight into fight or flight mode to defend him.
Right. And when political ideas become tied to that exact same neurological defense mechanism, the concept of compromise essentially dies.
Because if your political stance is fundamentally your identity, then someone attacking your preferred policy isn't just a lively debate. It feels like an existential threat to your personhood.
And you cannot negotiate your own existence.
You really can't. Which entirely changes the ecosystem of who can survive in politics. A quiet policy wonk with a great 10-point plan for infrastructure is going to get eaten alive in an environment driven by identity defense.
Which explains the explosive rise of charismatic leadership during this period.
Yes. And we need to be careful with definitions here because we usually think of charisma as just being charming or likable.
Right, like a movie star.
But in this specific political context, charisma doesn't necessarily mean a leader is factually correct or even universally liked. It's defined as the ability to evoke intense emotional responses, dominate the media landscape entirely, and command unwavering loyalty.
The dossier uses Donald Trump as the defining case study for this, right?
It does. It notes that regardless of political preference, whether a voter absolutely loved him or passionately despised him, he possessed a once-in-a-generation ability to generate and hold human attention.
Yeah, he dictated the emotional temperature of the entire country every single day. Opponents and supporters were both entirely reactive to his frequency.
And how does a leader actually weaponize that immense volume of attention once they capture it? They need a framework to pour all that emotion into.
And the primary psychological strategy outlined in the sources is populism.
Yes, and it is vital to detach this word from its usual use as a casual insult. As defined in the dossier, populism isn't just a political ideology, it's a deeply effective psychological approach.
Built on a really simple binary concept, right?
Yeah, exactly. The pure, ordinary people against a corrupt, out-of-touch elite.
It provides a desperately needed villain for all that fear and anxiety we unpacked earlier.
And immediate emotional validation. If you feel left behind by the global economy or alienated by rapid cultural shifts, the populist narrative says it's not your fault. Your struggles are the direct result of deliberate actions by those in power.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. because we hit a massive paradox that frustrates so many people.
The facts versus feelings paradox.
Yes. We live in the peak of the information age. We have the sum total of human knowledge, fact checkers, and data in our pockets at all times. Why doesn't a flood of undeniable verified facts puncture these narratives? Like, why don't facts change minds?
Because the human brain possesses robust defensive mechanisms that repel facts that threaten our identity. People interpret information through the lens of their existing beliefs.
The dossier outlines three major psychological forces at play here, doesn't it?
It does. Confirmation bias, groupthink, and cognitive dissonance.
Let's actually look at the mechanics of those, because people throw those terms around constantly.
Sure.
Confirmation bias is basically our brain's tendency to act like a bouncer at a club.
Yeah.
Right. Only letting in information that tells us we are already right and kicking out anything that contradicts us.
Exactly. And groupthink is that evolutionary urge we mentioned earlier, the desperate need to agree with our tribe so we don't get cast out into the cold.
And then there's cognitive dissonance, which the sources say is the most powerful mechanism of the three.
Think of it like a psychological immune system. When you are presented with a hard fact that directly contradicts a core belief, a belief that holds your identity together, your brain treats that fact like an invading virus.
Wow, so it actually fights it off.
Literally. The introduction of contrary evidence triggers the exact same stress centers in the human brain as physical pain.
So to cure the pain, your brain attacks the fact, rationalizes it away, or even attacks the character of the person delivering the fact.
Yes. The result is the exact opposite of what we would rationally expect. Showing someone contrary data often makes them double down on their original belief because they are actively defending themselves from psychological discomfort.
That explains so much. Because of these mechanisms working in tandem, two citizens can watch the exact same political debate, read the exact same economic report, and walk away with two completely opposed yet entirely sincere realities.
It's incredible.
But if facts just bounce off the psychological immune system, how do you ever reach someone?
You bypass the immune system entirely with a story. Humans are narrative creatures. We process reality through a sequence of beginning, middle, and end.
Right. We think in stories, not spreadsheets.
The source material is emphatic on this point. In the political arena, a good, emotionally resonant story will beat a dry spreadsheet every single time. A leader who can weave a compelling narrative about a lost golden age, a current existential crisis, and a future redemption holds the ultimate advantage.
Okay, so if our brains are evolutionarily wired for stories, for tribal group identity, and for emotional threat responses, what happens when you introduce an entirely new communication system designed to ruthlessly exploit that exact wiring?
You get the social media ecosystem of the 2015 to 2029 era. This was the great accelerant.
How did the delivery method actually change the message, though?
Well, the dossier stresses that social media fundamentally altered political psychology, not by changing human nature, but by creating an environment where our worst ancient impulses became the algorithm's best commodities.
Because the algorithms running these platforms do not care if a story is objectively true or deeply nuanced.
Not at all. They only care if the story keeps your eyes glued to the screen. And what keeps human eyes on a screen?
Outrage.
Here.
Immediate validation of our deepest biases.
Exactly. The communication system itself transformed the message. Careful, methodical analysis of an international trade policy is practically invisible on a platform built for rapid engagement.
But a highly emotional, polarizing meme travels at light speed.
Right. We essentially took our ancient hunter-gatherer brains constantly scanning the horizon for a predator and plug them into a machine that feeds us a million perceived existential threats a day.
It makes you feel like your way of life is under constant siege. And when a population feels perpetually under siege, what happens to the foundation of a society? What happens to trust?
It shatters. The sources identify trust as the invisible architecture, the absolute fragile foundation of democracy.
Because it is not the Constitution, the physical laws, or the courts that hold a country together.
Where?
It is the collective belief of the citizens that those things matter.
Right, because the law is just ink on paper if no one believes in the system enforcing it.
For the system to work, citizens must trust elections, institutions, the media, the courts.
Yeah.
And crucially, each other.
Yes. When that trust declines, you don't just get political apathy, you create a massive void. And that void is rapidly filled by intense polarization and conflict. The text highlights trust as the most valuable yet simultaneously the most fragile element of any democracy.
How does that fragile system hold up when a real, undeniable crisis hits, say, a massive economic crash or a global health emergency.
A crisis acts as an immense magnifying glass. The dossier notes that extreme stress drastically amplifies everything we've been unpacking. The primal fear, the desperate need for clarity, and the search for direction.
So a leader in a crisis holds incredible power.
Absolutely. They can utilize that shared fear to unite a fractured society against a common challenge, or they can weaponize it to turn factions against each other and solidify their own base. True leadership quality only becomes fully visible when the societal fabric is stretched to its absolute limit.
It really strips away all the political marketing and leaves you with the raw mechanics of power.
It really does.
I think the overwhelming takeaway from Chapter 19 is that we have to retire the spreadsheet model of politics. Political choices are just not purely rational.
No, they aren't. A leader's true influence isn't measured by the legislative depth of their policy proposals. It's measured by their ability to bind the raw emotions, fears, and identities of millions of people to a single shared narrative.
And recognizing that distinction is the very first step to truly understanding the profound political shifts of this century.
Completely agree.
Well, we are just scratching the surface of this text. In our next deep dive, we're jumping straight into Chapter 20.
That one is going to be intense.
Oh, definitely. We will look specifically at the legacy of the Trump era and how history might ultimately judge it. What started as what many dismissed as a supposedly temporary novelty candidacy in 2015 morphed into a massive global phenomenon.
It really forced a complete redefinition of debates on globalization, migration, trade, media, and democracy itself.
We will explore how his supporters view him as the necessary wrecking ball who challenged entrenched power structures and finally gave forgotten groups a genuine voice.
It is a tremendously complex legacy, and evaluating it requires keeping all of the psychological tools we explored today firmly in mind.
But before we go, we want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, this is a good one.
We've spent this entire deep dive talking about how charismatic leaders exploit our ancient biology, our cognitive dissonance, and our need for emotional connection. But what happens to politics in the next decade when artificial intelligence learns to analyze our individual confirmation biases and simulate human charisma perfectly?
Right. If our brains are this easily hacked by human storytellers, will the ultimate flawless populist leader of the future even be human?
Think about that the next time you feel the urge to instantly share an outrageous headline. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you, and we will see you next time.